I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Once upon a time, among the iconic scenes of the West were mountains covered with green, fragrant pine trees. Nowadays, you're more likely to see entire forests of brown. That's because since 1997, more than 41 million acres have suffered partial or total death of conifer trees. Today we'll learn what's causing this massive destruction of our forests and meet the man whose near-death experience set him on the path to save the champion trees and reforest lands in America and around the world. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. An old Chinese proverb suggests that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time, today. 20 years ago, David Millard, a northern Michigan nurseryman known for hard living, had a vision. Angels told him the earth was in trouble and that its trees were dying. Human life was in jeopardy. The solution, they told him, was to clone the champion trees of the world, the largest and hardiest, and create a kind of Noah's Ark of tree genetics. Just like that, Millard began his mission of cloning the world's great trees. 20 years later, he's done some of that work, and his story has now been told by Jim Robbins in a new book, The Man Who Planted Trees, Lost Groves, Champion Trees, and an Urgent Plan to Save the Planet. Jim Robbins is a contributor to the science section of the New York Times, and he's written for Smithsonian, Audubon, and Vanity Fair. He joins us on the line this morning from Helena, Montana. Jim, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve.
And also with us is the man who planted trees, David Millard. He's a third-generation shade-tree farmer, a former competitive arm wrestler and street brawler, and he joins us this morning from Copemish, Michigan. David, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
You were a street brawler, David? Tell us about that. Should I be nervous?
Well, no, that was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago, when I was born and raised in Livonia, a suburb of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was rather fashionable. It was like James Dean influence. It wasn't as you might picture.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, David, tell us about this vision that you had one day where angels told you the earth was in serious trouble.
Well, it came as a very, very much of a surprise to me. I drank heavily back in those days, and I experienced total renal failure. My kidneys and livers quit. And I was in the emergency room in the hospital, and the doctor said I was going to die. And I said, no, I'm not. And we were both right. A little later on, about 12 hours later, I had a near-death experience. And I went to the other side, and I'd never really thought about angels or religion. Quite the opposite. And I was told there on the other side that I had to go back. I had work to do. And I said, just my luck, I get booted out of a very beautiful place. And they said they would tell me later what it was. And about 3 weeks later, after I came back into my body and healed some, much to the surprise of many, I had a visit one night. And I would call it a light being or an angel. They said, sit down in your recliner, take a yellow pad, and take notes. Well, that's all I remember. And 3 hours later, when I awoke, an outline for the Champion Tree Project was on that yellow pad. Really.
There it was, just like that.
Really. And I've never written an outline in my life, and Jim can attest to that.
Well, Jim, when you heard about David's dream, how did you react to that?
Well, you know, at first I had written a story for the Times about the Champion Tree Project. I didn't know this backstory when the story in the Times came out. And then I met David about a year later, and he told me this story. And I scratched my head, and, wow, that's pretty interesting. I've written some science stories. I don't think anyone's ever told me a story with that kind of genesis behind it. But a few years later, my trees on my property here in Montana started dying. We've got about 15 acres, or we had about 15 acres of ponderosa and some spruce. And one year, 2005, we came out and we noticed there were a couple of trees dead from pine bark beetles. The next year, there were a couple of dozen trees dead. And then the year after that, there were hundreds of trees dead. And by 4 or 5 years, all of our trees were dead, except for a few that we spray around the house every year. So I started seeing all of my trees die very rapidly. And I also started noticing that the temperatures were changing in Montana. We used to get 30 below zero 3 weeks a year, perhaps. This year, we had no below zero weather. Mm. So I started putting the pieces together to see what was going on, and it was alarming. So I paid a little more attention to David's story and what might be happening.
But when you first heard about the dream, Jim, and David's vision here, what were you thinking? What went through your mind?
Well, I didn't know much about the phenomena of near-death experiences, and as I read more about it, it sounded like it could possibly be true to me, and so I didn't rule it out. I mean, I didn't consider it just some sort of fantasy. I think there may be something going on there. And so I took it to heart, and I decided to tell his story with as much grounding in science as I could. There are a lot of people who believe those kinds of things, and I think that it appeals to a lot of people. And part of, though, the story didn't matter because there was a lot of science to back up what he was saying. So was it true? Yes, I thought his experience was true. Did he really get visited by angels? Perhaps. But that didn't matter because there's a lot of science out there as well that shows that we're in trouble. Our trees and forests are in trouble. So that's kind of how I approached it.
And certainly, Jim, your own experience in Montana, you begin the book describing that. And I got to tell you, it was just heartbreaking reading about that. Describe your property today and how it's changed for you the way it is today versus what it was even 5-7 years ago.
Well, we bought 15 acres of forested land outside of Helena, about 3 miles away, and it was a beautiful forest, and we had trails we hiked through the forest, and now we pretty much live on the prairie because we've cut down 6 or 7 acres of trees, but we couldn't afford to cut them all down, so we still have 6 or 7 acres of dead trees on our property, and they're virtually all dead. There's a handful that are still alive, but basically we are living on the prairie. And it's not just our property. It's all over Montana. It's all over Idaho. It's all over Wyoming and Colorado, for crying out loud. Look what's happening right now in Colorado. The temperatures are over 100 for the last 4 or 5 days, 102, 103, and fires are raging. I mean, if this isn't a climate change scenario, setting these temperature records and watching these forests die, then I don't know what is. One other key component of this is I wrote a story for the New York Times a few years ago, and these stories are available on their website. I went to the bristlecone pines, which are the oldest trees in the world.
Yes,
and they're 4,000 to 5,000 years old. And the ones I went to are in Nevada, near Ely, Nevada. And I did a story on an effort there to find trees that are resistant to the same beetles that killed my trees, but also to a fungus that came from Europe 100 and some years ago and has now made its way to these trees. And all of the bristlecone pines, 4,000 to 5,000 years old, are going to die in the next 10, 20 years because of climate change. Hmm. And it's alarming. And I think it was time to sound the alarm. And to let people know what's happening to the trees. And when trees all around you start dying, it's time to take note.
And Jim, I'm wondering, would you have bought the same property in Montana today if you knew what was going to happen to it?
Well, that's a good question. I hadn't thought about that. Probably not. You pay a premium for forested land, and now it's not forested. But we're still happy there. We still have trails, and we go off into the woods. There was just a lot of dead trees around us and more prairie than there was. But it's still a beautiful place.
You know, David, as you heard Jim just describing what's happening in Colorado, what's happening to his own land in Montana, what are you thinking? What's going through your mind as you look out across the American landscape today as to what's happening to our trees?
It's almost deja vu-y. If we go back 15 years ago when the message came through, and it was very vivid, very detailed, so was the outline. It's like I've walked into a nightmare that was predicted, that could have been averted in part, But all of the scenarios that I was given that one night are coming true before my eyes, not just in Montana, but here in northern Michigan. We're in northwest lower Michigan, and our main economy in the winter is skiing and snowmobiling.
Mm-hmm.
And normally in February and March, we have 2 to 3 feet of snow. Ice fishing, snowmobiling, and skiing are our main economy. And this February and March, the last day of February was 88 degrees. The first day of March, it was 90. Excuse me. And the third day of March, it was 92. And they were literally water skiing and golfing here in northern Michigan. But as I travel and talk around the country and even around the world, most people aren't aware that we've had over 120,000, just in the United States, 120,000 record highs in cities day by day so far this year. Something is going on.
You know, David, I think you just made a great point. You're taking the words out of my mouth. I don't think most folks are aware really of much of any of this. They know it's getting a little warmer out there, but the devastation that Jim just described in Colorado and in Montana, people might have a faint idea of what's going on.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, but people really haven't latched on to it, David.
No, they're latching on more and more as the days tick by that are well over 100 degrees. And I don't like to be the bearer of bad news. I don't like this. I think that there are things, positive things that we can do, but we were cloning a year and a half ago, Archangel Ancient Tree Archive, the 3,000-year-old giant sequoias in Southern California, on top of the Sierra Nevada Range, and NASA and the Forest Service say that we're quite likely to lose all of our 3,000-year-old giant sequoias because it's getting too hot and too dry for them. The same holds true for all of our 2,000 to 3,000-year-old coast redwoods. That's a 500-mile north-to-south range. So as we clone these great trees, as we do at Archangel Ancient Tree, we're putting those genetics and moving those genetics north into a cooler climate. That's called transmigration. To save these trees and the family of trees, because quite frankly, here in northern Michigan, it's been 90 to 95 for the last month, primarily, with very little rain, and our forests, and forests wherever I travel, are dying. We need to do something, all of us, now. One of the things we could do is preserve the very last of the great genetics of trees, because the United States has deforested by 98% our old-growth forests. 98%. Mm-hmm. Our old growth is dead, gone. So we only have 2% left to try to capture that really important old growth genetic material so we can study it.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking about an urgent effort to save old growth trees, as David Millark just mentioned, and a new book by New York Times science section contributor Jim Robbins, The Man Who Planted Trees. If you want to join our conversation with your questions about what's going on across our country and this effort to save these old growth trees, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. I guess, David, this is probably a really good time to begin to talk about the Champion Tree Project. When did you start it, and where is it right now, and what are you trying to do with it?
Champion Tree Project was birthed shortly after my visitation, 15 or 17 years ago. The outline that came through, we converted that to the Champion Tree Project, or finding the largest and oldest species of all 846 different species of trees in the United States and beginning to clone them. So that genetic line can be kept alive in archival living libraries. The Champion Tree Project was, for about 15 years, a nonprofit, and 3.5 years ago it morphed into Archangel Ancient Tree Archive. And that's because we widened our scope to an international scope. And Archangel Ancient Tree has done the 1,000-year-old oaks in Ireland. And we hope to do more of the trees of Europe this coming year, So as it became more of a global scale, the top 100 most important trees to try and clone those around the world, we changed and morphed into a larger organization.
You know, David, people will wonder, how do you clone a giant tree? How do you do that?
Well, number one, for the last 20 years, almost every expert that we've ever heard from around the world, university, Forest Service, whoever, said it's impossible. It's like a 115-year-old woman giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
These ancient trees just won't allow you to clone them. Well, I'm happy to report that Archangel and Champion Tree has done about 100 different species around the world with about a 70% success rate. So we were able to clone 3,000-year-old sequoias, 2,000-year-old redwoods, 1,000-year-old oaks, but we had to incorporate the latest science and a lot of good guesswork on which method of cloning, through micropropagation or tissue culturing or rooted cuttings, which to use. And a lot of the trees we had to try 10, 12, 15 times, go back and try again, try another method. But it does work, I'm happy to say, and we're able to really preserve these valuable genetics.
Jim Robbins, describe to us how you guys go about cloning these giant trees.
Well, they simply take a cutting and 6 inches long, like a pencil, and they scratch a little bit of bark off the bottom, and they put it in a growth medium and keep it wet, and eventually the roots will emerge from that cutting and form a new tree. It takes a few years, but eventually it will form a new tree. And I also want to say something, Steve. David said that experts told him they couldn't clone these trees, and that's true. And that brings up a really important point, is that trees are very poorly understood by scientists, trees and forests. Every scientist I talked to told me it's astounding how little we know about trees and forests on every level. Virtually nothing about the root system. Very little about how trees die, or how they senesce or grow old. It's just we're hamstrung as we come into this urgent time regarding our trees and forests by a lack of knowledge. I mean, we know about timber production, we know about nut and fruit production, but basically, very little is understood about trees, and so we're kind of flying blind in all this.
But Jim, how can that be, given how common trees are to our everyday lives? How can that be?
Well, there's no money in it. I mean, there's money in timber, there's money in crops, but there's really no money in understanding, you know, how trees protect us from ultraviolet light. I mean, there's some research on these things, but just not nearly as much as you might think. I mean, one of the things we go into in the book is all about aerosols that trees emit. And a lot of these aerosols are medicinal compounds. And what do they do? Well, we don't really know. What do they do in the environment? We don't know. I mean, these are things like antibiotics, antifungals, chemo preventatives or cancer preventatives. These things are emitted by trees. These are known to be healthful compounds. But what they do after they leave the tree is a mystery to science because it simply has not been studied or not well studied at all.
How important is it to save our trees? That's our topic today, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's go to Alice from Liberty. Alice, you're on the program. Good morning.
Hi there. Thanks so much. I really enjoy the show.
Good. Thank you.
This is just really kind of an emotional issue for me. I'm going to try to remain calm. But I think that we really need to pay attention to what's happening even at the local legislative level and city council level, because in Liberty we had a developer that was allowed to cut down 500 to 300-year-old oaks and put in a CVS pharmacy, and he was supposed to plant 2,000 trees. That was somehow the trade-off for planting down, you know, for cutting those down. And the last I heard, he planted about 200 of those 2,000. It's been 3 years. And so there's just no accountability, plus not a real, you know, there just isn't a value placed on that. You know, so at any rate.
Yeah, you know.
At the event, since we're on the tree subject.
Well, the problem with this kind of a thing is that those trees have a benefit to society at large, but we don't really have a way of paying for that. But for that developer who's building the CVS, he's going to make a lot of money on that corner or wherever. But it's hard to kind of value trees that have broad societal benefits. There's a real gap there, and
right.
And it's so people need to lobby and to try and keep those things from being cut down.
Yeah,
they're looked at as a commodity, not a living being. They're just a commodity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, David, don't folks just take these things for granted. I mean, that's what you're fighting here, right, is mass apathy.
Well, and a lack of understanding and a lack of education what root trees really do to help not just humankind, but, you know, all of our ecosystems.
Yeah.
We need to rebuild our ecosystems state by state, county by county, country by country. And if we don't repair those ecosystems and our filter system, I think we're going to reap the wind, which is going to be a very hot, dry wind. And Jim does a wonderful job in The Man Who Planted Trees, the book, on explaining how and why we need to repair our damaged ecosystems. And if we don't, what we can expect. But if we do, how we can reverse a lot of these negative effects.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in books, a lot of people on talk shows, scaring the dickens out of people all around the country and the world. That's not our point here in the book. It's to give people knowledge and understanding and the tools to help repair and rebuild the filter system and ecosystems of this country. I don't think anyone has done that before, like Jim had.
Yeah. Well,
one of the things I'm trying to do in this book, Steve, is to reframe how we see trees. You know, we see trees as providing some shade, and they're pretty, and maybe a treehouse or something.
Right.
But I think of them as an ecotechnology. If you look at all the things they do, from reclaiming desertified land to attracting moisture to cooling areas, cooling streams, and so on, you can think of them as a technology for reclaiming broken pieces of the planet. And you could not invent a technology as powerful or as wide-ranging as a tree. It's really astounding when you start to look at the science that is out there. You have this long list of the things that trees do, and a lot of people don't know that trees can accomplish as much as they can.
Hmm. You know, Jim, David was just saying that your aim isn't to go out and scare people. Lots of other people are doing that. But hearing you describe the loss of these trees and your effort to clone them and the years that it will take, the decades, centuries perhaps, to get these trees to replace the ones in full that are there now, is it too late? I mean, I'm just wondering, hearing you talk, have we missed our chance already?
I would say nobody really knows. I don't think it's too late. I think that, there's a quote in the book, on the last day of the world, I should want to plant a tree. And I think we have to proceed as if we can plant trees and turn this thing around, at least in some places, maybe globally. I mean, there's evidence to show that trees have an effect on the climate, cooling the climate globally. And again, remember, we don't know a lot about trees and forests and how they affect the world. So, you know, let's forge ahead. There's hope here. There's more hope here than any other place I've looked into. And I want to say, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, I thought the idea of planting a tree was kind of a feeble response to climate change.
Mm-hmm.
That I've been turned around by all the evidence I've looked at and the people I've talked to, like David, and said there's a lot more going on here than we know. And it not only can help with climate change and warming. I mean, there are heat shield. That's important. But they can also help with a whole range of other things out there. So it's a win-win-win situation. And I think that a massive program to plant trees, big trees, the right tree in the right place, as they say, is important.
Mm-hmm. David Malark, do you think it's too late?
I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. I certainly hope not. We have two sons that are involved with Archangel Ancient Tree, and we have the gift of two grandchildren that live next door. And every morning I get up, and every evening when I go to bed, I try and do my best to try and avert the catastrophes for all of our children and all of our grandchildren. That's what keeps me going. I think if the world catches on to how severe the situation is on a lot of levels where we're at, but we have a concerted effort where everyone does a little bit, millions and millions and millions of people around the world start to plant two or three trees each year. I've seen some of the new math that NASA has put out We have several NASA Earth scientists that endorse Jim's book, and it's pretty amazing. It gives a real ray of hope on this climate change, as well as some of the toxins and pollutions in our water and our soil, what the effects of reforestation and rebuilding the natural filter system can do.
Let me go back to some phone calls here, and Susan from Kansas City North. Susan, you're on the show.
Hi. First of all, I'm an RN, and I have been in the business for 35-plus years now. I've taken care of patients who have survived near-death experiences. The ones who talk about it have very, very vivid descriptions of what happened to them. So I absolutely believe what happened to David. Mm. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I grew up in the mountains of Southern California with the ponderosa pine, and I can remember them starting to die when I was in high school. When we had the big fire a few years ago, the Waterman Canyon fire that basically burned from basically L.A. all the way down practically to the border. We were near Waterman Canyon. The fire came within 800 feet of my parents' house. We had 15 minutes to get out.
Mm.
We have got to plant trees. We also have to be responsible and write to our legislators and tell them that trees are more important than fracking, which uses our fresh water. We've got to take care of the earth we have left. Thank you.
Susan, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Robert from Archie, Missouri. Robert, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, I just had a question on how would more trees help the habitat for the trees, even the trees you're cloning? How can they survive in a habitat that nothing or any other tree can survive in? Shouldn't we fix the habitat first?
Yeah, maybe the question at this point, Jim, is where are the trees being replanted?
Well, they're not being, on a large scale, being replanted. They're still being reproduced and planted in living libraries. But the important thing about a champion tree or these survivors, these proven survivors, is that they may offer us the best bet for what's coming. We don't know. It hasn't been studied. And so David's plan is to clone the proven survivors, make copies as the best bet that we have for what's coming in the future. They've survived for 100 or 200 or 500 or 2,000 years, so they must know something about survival. But it may not be that the champion trees are the ones that we should only plant. I mean, some people believe we should take trees from the southern end of their range. Ponderosa pines grew around my house, and they grow in Arizona. So maybe we should clone those trees, those ponderosa pines that have survived and adapted to Arizona, and move them up to Montana because they may be able to tolerate temperatures 10 degrees warmer than the ones we have in Montana. So there's other strategies as well out there for planting trees. But proven survivors or the champion trees could very well be critical to what's coming in the next century.
And I should point out that a champion tree is a tree that has the highest combined score of three measurements: height, crown size, and diameter at breast height, right?
Correct.
Jim, what are scientists saying about this project, and what are they saying about how effective that David Millarc might be in doing what he's doing?
Well, every scientist I talked to virtually said the same thing. Well, we don't know about tree genetics, but this seems to make a lot of sense.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And people like Bill Libby, who's an expert on redwood trees, has lent his credibility and his thinking about trees and his education. He's a professor emeritus at UC Berkeley to this project. And a number of other scientists have said the same thing. Let's clone these trees. Let's protect them. And let's get them out there in the world. And so I think that that's a very strong endorsement for the role that these trees might play. It's money in the bank.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about trees, how important they are, and how much in danger the trees in our neck of the woods are here in Kansas and Missouri. And we'll grab a phone call from Randy as well. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you miss catching up on the latest in password protection and other geekery, you can listen to our experts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, Separation of Church and State, Dolly Madison, and everything you wanted to know but were afraid to ask about our fourth president, James Madison. But this hour we're talking about an urgent call to action to save our trees. It's chronicled in a new book, The Man Who Planted Trees, Lost Groves, A Champion Trees, and An Urgent Plan to Save the Planet by Jim Robbins. He's joined by the subject of this book, David Malark. He is the man who planted trees. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's go to Randy from Kansas City, Missouri, who has a question that I wanted to get to pretty quickly here. Randy, good morning.
Hey, thanks, Steve. It just amazes me driving around Kansas City and you see the park areas and see how many of these pine trees have been affected by this bark beetle, whatever it is. But my question is, obviously, there's, you know, guys like Weyerhaeuser and some of the big paper or the tree planting guys. They plant an awful lot of pine trees or trees like that. I guess my question is it better to plant a slow-growth tree, something that's going to take a long time to basically get, you know, us back into place, or would it be better to plant some of these fast-growing pine trees so that we can restore the the climate and those kinds of things? I live in Brookside, and I mean, we have these beautiful oak trees around here, and you know, it would make no sense to me to plant a pine tree. But given that, you know, that we see a diminishing population of trees for whatever reason, disease and just the heat, would it make more sense to plant? You touched on it, I think, a little bit in the previous question, but I'd like to know so I could go out and start doing some things, you know, that would make sense, you know, to the environment.
David Malark, what do you recommend, slow growth or fast growing trees?
The faster the growing tree, the faster it stacks carbon or sequesters it away safely and produces more oxygen, cleans the air, cleans the water. So we need fast growing trees that can stack carbon like crazy out of the atmosphere and produce oxygen. But the key now is with the climate shift that's happening all over the country, all over the world, which trees might be appropriate that have been appropriate for decades, even centuries. Some of those trees are no longer appropriate when you look into the future. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest wherever you're listening to this, take a look at the trees that are one or two zones warmer, the trees natural to that range, and incorporate those into your local plantings, a fast-growing tree that is heat and drought tolerant, mm-hmm. that might be from a southern more region than what you're normally accustomed to planting, and I would put them in groves. And the beautiful thing about the man who planted trees, as Jim said in his book, this is something that every man, every woman, and every child can do.
Yeah,
and that's what we need to do.
Jim, I gather, are you replacing the trees around your cabin in Montana, or how are you approaching that?
Well, right now there are some trees coming back. Seeds in the soil have started to sprout. They're 3 or 4 years old. They're about knee-high, so we're kind of waiting to see what happens. But I also want to say something about the paper companies planting these groves. You know, these are trees that are selected to create paper pulp or perhaps lumber or something like that. They're selected to grow very fast, and that's all they're selected for. We don't know if those trees are going to survive, and there are certainly a lot fewer species in terms of biodiversity in these groves of factory trees. So that's probably not a good strategy in terms of services provided to people, you know, filtering and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But David's right about picking trees that would grow in warmer climates. And I think the real question here is we need a kind of a crash course in what trees we should be planting. People should know these things. We should have some sort of help from the government to say, okay, everyone can go out and plant trees, but here's the trees and here's where you need to plant them. I mean, it's not as simple as plopping a tree in the ground always. There's a saying in agroforestry, which uses trees to help agriculture, the right tree in the right place for the right reason. So it's a strategic approach. There's a lot more to it than just picking out a tree at Walmart or something.
816. Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
And we have to look at trees not as a crop, like corn or soybeans or tomatoes, which in most cases for pulp trees, they know in 30 years it's going to be harvested as a crop. Well, as they harvest them and it's converted into paper, all that stored carbon is re-released. So we have to take a look at it differently. We need trees that will stay there, trees that will be around for a long, long time in growth to stack the carbon, sequester the excess carbon out of the atmosphere, produce more oxygen, all the while scrubbing the air and the soil and the water of the toxins that threaten our children and grandchildren.
So, David, are you saying that when a tree is chopped down, that any carbon that tree has captured during its lifetime gets re-released into the atmosphere?
I'm saying if it's manufactured into anything or if it's burnt, we re-release that carbon. Millions of years ago, all the excess carbon that was in the atmosphere was taken out by plants and algae and things, and it's stored safely away. Mother Nature was wiser than we are. She stored it away deep in the earth, all the excess carbon, and over the millions of years, that excess carbon, we came along this industrial area, and we're pumping it out. It's called oil, coal, and shale. Well, all the carbon that's safely sequestered away by Mother Nature from a time long gone when there was lots of excess carbon in the atmosphere, why on earth are we mining it, pumping it, burning it, and re-releasing it into the atmosphere? It just adds to the burden that the oceans and our trees that is trying to keep up with the climate change, that is something that I would like everybody to think about.
Yeah. Jim, I'm wondering.
Important.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
British Columbia is probably ground zero for forest death. I mean, Montana's bad, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, but British Columbia lost 40 million acres of forests, mature forests, in the last 10 years.
Wow.
And they went from being a carbon sink, which means they stored excess carbon dioxide, and now they're a carbon source because all of these trees died and they're re-releasing it into the atmosphere. I talked to a Forest Service official up there a few years ago, and he told me he flew over these forests in a small plane, and they flew for 2 hours and didn't see a live tree. And so all these trees are letting go of this carbon they've stored for centuries, and it's you know, it's a disaster in the making up there.
You know, Jim, I wonder if you can give us a macro science lesson here. Are you saying that eventually we're going to see all the trees that are in our belt, I'm referring to Missouri and Kansas now, are those trees going to pass on and then we're going to see trees from a layer or two south of us sort of take their place over time? Is that sort of the cycle that we're in right now?
Well, it's possible. I mean, no one really knows because it's hard to project the future and these things aren't well studied, as I've said. But it may be that other species will move into these niches, or it may be that nothing will, that it will just become more grassland. Texas had a serious drought in the last couple of years. And in Houston, I think it was Dallas or Houston, they lost 5 million street trees due to this hot, dry weather. And, of course, when it gets hotter and drier, you have more disease and more insects.
Mm-hmm.
They lost 5 million street trees, and that means they estimate an extra $250 million a year in extra air conditioning costs because these trees shaded buildings and kept things cooler. But they also lost 500 million forest trees around the state from this hot, dry weather. So the handwriting is on the wall. And we can't wait to see what's going to happen in 10 or 20 years if something will move in to replace some of these forests. I think people need to take trees in hand and start digging holes, and maybe at a large scale.
You know, Jim, I just can't get over some of the things you're describing here. You know, flying over British Columbia for a couple of hours, not seeing any trees. You know, millions of trees disappearing in the Houston area. I mean, these numbers are just so overwhelming to me. It's making me nervous.
Jim, could you share with the cycle of that beetle that's from all the way from Mexico to Alaska? That's devastating, one of the largest die-offs. Could you describe that, how, because of the warmer temperatures, the beetles are prolific in reproduction?
Well, they've done studies in New Mexico and in the biosphere, too, which is that big plastic or glass dome in Arizona, and they put trees in there and starve them of water, and they die very quickly. They die at a much higher rate than trees that are in the chamber where temperatures are today. Mm-hmm. So they're mimicking what's coming in the next 100 years. It could be anywhere from 6 to 10 degrees, which has never happened on the Earth before. Only over 20,000 years did something like that happen. So mm-hmm. we're talking about this huge rise. And this bug, this beetle that killed my trees, killed trees all the way to Colorado, and other bugs killed trees in New Mexico and Arizona. And it's happening again. And so, yes, this is scary stuff, but people should be scared. They should be prompted into action, because people will sit back. And if the media isn't covering this, and the media has not done a great job of covering these things,
right.
they've done an okay job, then people won't know what's going on, and they won't take action until it's too late. So, yeah, I think a little splash of cold water in the face is a good idea. And these things are real, and these things are good science. People should know what's happening, and it's time to start taking steps to do something. Climate change is not something that's coming. Climate change is something that is here, mm-hmm. and it's having a profound effect on the world around us, especially in the American West, but everywhere.
Can either of you describe what's happening in the Kansas-Missouri area when it comes to our trees?
No,
well, I can't.
I'm not an expert in the Kansas-Missouri area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But one thing I can say that would apply to Kansas City or would apply to any urban area is that these trees, these street trees, are not just a little shade for us. They will be critical to what's coming. They keep our water clean. They keep our air clean. This is all proven good science. They shade us. They protect us from UV. They may do other things as well. And as it gets warmer, those street trees will start dying. So people in places like where you live, Steve, should start paying attention to what their urban forest looks like and getting out there and urging their officials to do more, because you need to start replacing trees that may be dying from heat stroke or from other things in the coming decades and get a new crop going.
So that 150-year-old oak tree or 120-year-old oak tree that's in my backyard, you're saying that maybe in a few years I could be in trouble with that, Jim?
Yes, I would say nobody knows, but the science is out there to show that when it gets warmer, it gets drier, and when it gets drier and warmer, you get more insects, you get fungal diseases, and it's just unpredictable. I mean, the fungal diseases that are helping kill bristlecone pines, the oldest tree in the world that have survived everything, came from Europe, and there may be other things in the soil out there like that that are woken up by warmer temperatures. We just don't know. And so, you know, those trees might go for another 100 years, or you might start to see them fade in 10 years. And there's something in the pit of your stomach that starts to churn when you see these 300- and 400-year-old trees around you, as I did, start to die and turn brown and realize that all of your trees are dying.
We're talking Yeah, go ahead, David.
It's the immune systems of these trees. Trees have immune systems just like human beings. And excess drought and heat, the excess carbon in the air, which can be measured now, the excess toxins are all stressors on each of these trees, young and old, the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, if the immune system breaks down, well, you're going to lose that tree. They're a lot like we are.
Acid rain, too, that occurred in the 70s and 80s depleted calcium in the soil around the country. And so a lot of forests don't have enough calcium to build mm-hmm. tissue, and they're weakened because of this acid rain that occurred
Jim,
20 or 30 years ago.
If someone listening to this is thinking, well, they want to get ahead of the game and plant a tree that would be more native to one or two belts below south of the Kansas City area, where can they go to get information? What's a good, reliable source to get information about trees in that area?
Well, I would start with a local landscaper and pose that question to them. I don't know what grows where you are in Missouri there, oak tree, you said, but mm-hmm. they might know where you can get trees that are native to regions further south. But that's a good place to start. That's a more specific question than I've addressed in the book, but I think that it's different for every region of the country.
We've also got an email here that someone recommends the Heartland Tree Alliance as a good place to get information here locally about trees. Back to some phone calls at 816-235-2888. We're talking about how to save our trees today. Jim from Lee's Summit, good morning.
Yeah, hi. I really compliment you gentlemen for what you're trying to do, but I have probably seen in the last 6 months probably 30, 40 documentaries just on the subject and human encroachment and human activity, and I don't think there's any doubt, anybody who's willing to look at it, that human beings are the major cause of this. And just like today's show, I haven't heard you one mention about overpopulation, and you can do anything you try to do until you're willing to address that and get tough and start telling people you can't have, you know, 5.8 children and 4.5 children. We're doomed in the long run, because at some point you got to get tough. And when you give people incentives and pay people to have babies, we're going to hit 9 billion pretty quick if we don't do something.
What about overpopulation, David?
Well, I'm looking at a severe decline in underpopulation of our native forests. I don't disagree, but I'm not an expert on overpopulation. That's not my forte or my specialty. I'm not trying to make small or light of it. But I do know that if we don't replace our forests, our urban forests and our native forests, and reforest this planet in a hurry, overpopulation is not going to be an issue. We don't have any choices anymore.
Jim,
either reforest this planet or the outcome will be... I think that the possibility of life as we know it for our grandchildren will not exist if we don't reforest this planet.
Jim, what about overpopulation? What's your take on that?
I agree with the caller. We do need to address overpopulation. The scope of this book, though, is really about trees. It's an emergency response to what's happening. I think reducing population is at the bottom of all of our problems.
Yeah.
I think we should limit CO2 emissions, but of course, you know, our government doesn't seem to really care about CO2, so that's really who we would expect to take charge in terms of policy for climate change. We can't affect that. I mean, but we can plant trees, and we're trying to give people at least some hope about something they can do. And I think that's an important thing, more important than we know, is that people have something they can grasp and feel like
right.
they have a handle on. But do all those other things. I think they're critical. But right now, getting trees in the ground, protecting trees, cloning those sequoia trees that David has been cloning in California, moving them to other places, getting them out of harm's way, or expanding, it's like a seed bank. They're protecting the seeds in Norway in a big vault.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing. Let's protect it. We don't know what's coming. No one knows what's coming. We're beyond the collective wisdom of science at this point. Scientists say that. So I think just about anything we can do that seems smart and savvy, I think that's an important thing, and I don't know if we have time to reduce the population at this point.
Mm-hmm. You know, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I wonder if the two of you can describe some of these champion trees and describe some of these ancient sequoias that are, I think there's a picture on the inside front cover of Jake Malark climbing an ancient sequoia in the Lost Grove. Tell us about those trees. Describe them to us. Jim?
No, David, go ahead.
David, go ahead.
The waterfall tree, that is my our son Jake, who's climbing the waterfall tree. It's a 3,000-year-old giant sequoia at the top of the Sierra Nevada range. That tree has the largest diameter of any tree on Earth at ground level. It's 55 feet across.
Hmm.
So the tree was already 1,000 years old when Jesus walked the Earth. I don't know how long your house is,
mm-hmm.
but a large three-bedroom ranch house is about 60 feet, so it's as wide at the base as most people houses are wider, and a lot of the sequoias and the redwoods are 375 feet in that neighborhood tall. So the critical point there is that
95% of all the coast old-growth redwoods have been cut down. There's only 5% left.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little better than that for the sequoias, but we need to not only just preserve those genetics, make millions and millions, billions of these trees available for people to help reforest urban forestation, you know, the urban reforestation program, and help shade and cool the planet and start turning this thing around, sequester the carbon.
Well, walking up to one of these big trees is like walking up to King Kong. I mean, it's so big and so overwhelming that you don't have a frame of reference for it. And it's just,
writers,
you're humbled.
I mean,
that's really the feeling, is you're humbled by it because it's just so overwhelming to come
it's
up
like
to this.
Walking in a cathedral. You're just humbled, and usually you're very quiet.
Yeah. Well, boy, that's a great conversation. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for your good work with the Champion Tree Project. It was a pleasure to have both of you on the show today.
Thank you. It was an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. That's Jim Robbins. His new book, The Man Who Planted Trees, Lost Groves, Champion Trees, and an Urgent Plan to Save the Planet. David Millark is the co-founder of the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive and the Champion Tree Project. You can learn more about our guests and get more information about our show at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, The Separation of Church and State, Dolly Madison and our fourth president, James Madison. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.